If you're one of the nearly 10 million people in this country with a serious mental illness, you'll probably understand the struggle of our next guest. Taylor Neiman lives with bipolar disorder. It forced her to drop out of college with $20,000 of debt for a degree that she's been unable to finish. She's only 25 years old, but already it's devastated her career and her financial life. Taylor Neiman lives in Portland, Oregon, and she joins me now. Taylor, thanks for being brave enough to talk about this. I know you've had a hard time keeping a job because you've needed to get treatment for bipolar disorder.
Yeah, exactly. And or even the fact that I needed care, but I would just quit the job and then, you know, move to a different apartment, tried all these things besides getting care and not actually addressing the root cause, which was the mental illness. And so now that I can do that, I've actually finally found a job and a situation where if I need to back off from work and kind of come in as needed, I can do that. I have the freedom to do that. So I'm very lucky in that regard.
Sure. And your job now is working for a solar company. I understand you do some canvassing to try to get people to sign up for solar energy. Is that right?
Yeah. So we do everything from home shows to calling to mostly door knocking, even when it's super chilly out. But I also make commission, which really helps. So the fact that I'm working, you know, sometimes 10 hours a week can still be okay because I get commission based on how many appointments I get to sit. So finding a job that pays more than minimum wage sometimes can really help.
You know, the Americans with Disabilities Act makes it illegal for employers to fire their workers because of a mental illness, as long as you can do the essential functions of the job. So in some ways you're protected, but I'm sure it is still kind of scary to go into a new work situation and decide whether you're going to tell your boss. What's your strategy for that?
Yeah, that's definitely something I've always faced. A lot of places I've worked, you get allotted amount of, you know, sick days. And so that's part of the reason I've always quit jobs is because I'm about to get fired because I've missed so many days of work. And at my current job, you know, my manager right off the bat, maybe after like a month or so, kind of told me, hey, you know, if you're having any issues, if anything's going on and you need to talk to me, open door policy, like you come to me and tell me what's going on. And so I felt comfortable.
And you told your boss?
Yeah, I did. So I told my boss that, you know, I suffer from bipolar disorder, you know, I love work and I want to come to work, but some days I just can't get out the door for that reason.
How much money are you making a year in that job?
So I just started, but because it's commission, I'd say I make anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000, but with the potential to make more.
How has your mental illness and that struggle with it just affected your personal finances? Because that's not a lot of money to live on.
Yeah, it really isn't. I've been able to manage things now by opening, which I don't advise really, but, you know, opening credit cards and being able to live off those.
Oh, I hear financial planners all over the country sort of shaking in their boots right now. But do you pay that off every month or do you go deeper in debt?
So, I mean, yeah, you go deeper in debt and then once hopefully your life has gotten back together, then you can start making payments towards it again.
How much credit card debt do you have?
Oh, probably at this point close to $7,000 or $8,000. And that's not me alone. That's between me and my partner combined.
But it's in addition to the $20,000 you have in student loan debts.
Yes, in addition to that, and in addition to my partner's $50,000, $60,000.
You're 25 years old. I'm sure you have many dreams for yourself. How has this mental illness changed your expectations for your career?
It really has. I think part of it, too, and this might be a little bit of what being bipolar is you get these ideas in your head and you get really passionate about things it's kind of like go, 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 and you want to do this and you want to do that. And so you get like hyper focused on things. So, you know, when I had first started college, I wanted to be an archaeologist, and then I wanted to be an artist, and I just couldn't stay focused on one thing. And then, you know, I wanted to be a hairstylist, and I actually completed that, and I did that for a little bit, and then I changed again. I think, like, I just can't stay focused on anything. So that's my problem, is I want to do too many things, and I don't know what I want to do most of the time, if that makes sense.
That's Taylor Neiman, who is living with bipolar disorder and speaking to us about how that has affected her job prospects and her career. Taylor, thanks very much for speaking with us, and good luck to you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's turn now to Susan Goldberg. She's a psychologist, a lawyer, and an assistant professor of psychology at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh. She's looked at the challenge of managing mental illness and work. Dr. Goldberg, Taylor is in a tough spot. What would you advise her to do?
So we did research on people with psychiatric disabilities, and we found that the experts all had divergent ideas of to disclose or not to disclose for employment. Certain people, usually attorneys, said never disclose. And vocational rehab people said always disclose. And what we found that people with psychiatric disabilities did is figure out their own way, because it didn't work with what the experts said.
Huh.
And some people chose to disclose, some people chose never to disclose. But what I found was generally the most successful was selective disclosure of person, place, time, and content.
Hmm.
So selective disclosure of person would mean that you really trust this supervisor or this HR person that you disclose to. Selective disclosure of place has to do with the kind of entity you're working for. If it's in a small business, you may not want to disclose. A large business that knows about ADA, you may find it helpful to disclose. Selective disclosure of time means deciding when to disclose. Some people only disclosed immediately before they needed an accommodation. So they may have never disclosed for years, and then they needed to take time off, like Taylor said she needed, and then they would disclose at that point. And selective disclosure of content is a really cool one. It's not disclosing the whole thing, like not saying I have bipolar disorder or I have schizophrenia, because people even now stigmatize people with such disabilities. But to say I have a problem and I take some pills, or I'm a little anxious and I take some pills. So you can limit the amount of content you share while still asking for an accommodation. And I think that's what would be best for Taylor.
Taylor said that she trusted her boss when she went to her supervisor and disclosed, and it went well for her. Do you find that employers usually are accommodating if you've done it strategically?
I can't say yes or no. Every case is different. We had stories like one woman told the HR person as she was supposed to, and the secretary to the HR person had to get involved by passing it to the supervisor of the HR person. And the secretary then told everybody.
Mm.
So it's really, there's such variety on how trusting you can be with someone. And sometimes they don't even know that they're violating a trust. They may just say, hey, I heard that you're sick, or I heard that you were hospitalized. And they may not even realize how offensive that is to some people and what problems that causes. So I wouldn't say that people are always accommodating or never accommodating. I think it's really it really depends on the individual.
Big picture, I wonder what you make of all this, because managing a mental illness is difficult enough, but then you also have to manage the impacts to your professional and financial life, and that in and of itself can just add so many stresses. Can you just comment on how hard this can be?
It can be very hard. And then another aspect of it is if you don't disclose, you feel like you're hiding a secret, or you have no one to share it with at work. So there are many aspects of it. But I also think people who stay in low-wage jobs for fear of going into a higher-wage job also feel stressed by not rising to their full potential. So that there are people who have the potential to do better and are just afraid, and sometimes vocational rehabilitation people scare them and say, oh, you can't do a higher level job. And I don't think that's wise. I think people should aim as high as they can aim and just find a way to manage. Not to say that it's easy, but it's going to be stressful at a low wage for reasons of having a low wage, and it's going to be stressful at a high wage.
Dr. Susan Goldberg, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And let us know if this resonates with your own story. Did you tell your boss about your mental illness? How did it go? Did you decide not to tell your boss? And if you're an employer, how did you handle it? We're at hereandnow.org.